Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Kerryel. How you doing, my man?
Hey, how's it going, Thomas? Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, nice to see you again, mate. I remember last time. I forgot when we were first talking now. I think it was maybe 4, 5, maybe 6 months ago. It was quite a while ago, wasn't it?
A while, man. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yes, it's been good, mate. I feel like it's been a little bit of a long time in the making, but 6 months isn't too bad. I've had some where I've chatted with guests and then the years passed and we've still not done the show. So 6 months is a little bit disorganized, but it's not too bad. We're not the worst, my friend.
And it feels already like we're friends since 6 months because we have this relationship that started a little while ago.
Yeah, no, definitely, mate. I always talking to you, Kerryel. For the listeners that don't know you, I'm just going to do you a bit of an intro. So started off back in the early 2000s as a developer, software developer. You were at 5B Technologies Corporation. Then you progressed on to Juma Technologies Corp. You then were a senior solutions architect at Regard. And then you were a iOS developer at Treadwalker. You also spent some time at Sony Pictures and Bel Air Internet, where you progressed onto a management position. Then you progressed again up to C-level. So you were a CTO, Chief Technology Officer, at Sonky Pass. And then you were a director level at Cloud Sploit by Aqua Security. You are currently the co-founder and CTO of Securely. And you are also helping out Olympix, which is a position where you're leading a Web3 security solution. Welcome to the show, my man. How are you doing?
Thank you, Thomas. Pretty good, man. It's exciting to be here. Thank you for the time.
Yeah, good. So judging from what's going on, it sounds like you're pretty busy. I know there's some stuff going on in the Web3 world. There's some stuff going on with some automated pen testing, some automated smart contract stuff going on. But I'll start where I always start, which is, who are you and what are you up to at the minute?
I love that question. Originally born in Caracas, Venezuela, South America, I started coding right around when I was 10 years old, and I totally fell in love with it. It's funny, at some point in time, someone stole my computer from home, which was worthless because it was just a coding computer. Like a thief got into my home and stole it. And that probably inspired me to become a security practitioner. I'm like, what the hell? Like, people just go in and steal stuff like that. But yeah, jokes aside, like, I started coding and then got into the days. There were the BBXs or BBAs, all these different types of networks that we used to connect to. And cybersecurity became a passion at that point in time. And so my first project was developing an encryption algorithm. I became super passionate about encryption and public key infrastructure and cryptography, etc. And from there, it evolved into all sorts of different security-related projects for the enterprise and different companies.
Cool, my friend. Cool. So if someone stole your hardware, so maybe do some physical engagements and work out how to stop this happening, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, cool, mate. Cool. So yeah, strong background in encryption. Interesting story about how you got in. And in terms of Securely and what's going on there, I know there's like an automated pen testing element and stuff like that. Can you tell us a bit more about how that goes down and the benefits and the problems that solution's solving and looking to solve?
Yeah, absolutely. If we go back to my first engagement here in the States at 5B Technologies, like, I was first exposed to pen testing right at that time because they used to build a lot of web applications, and then basically pen testing was required and whatever, and we started doing it. And I noticed how we used to run all these different pen testing tools like Nessus, all these automated scans, but that was it. And getting a real manual pen test was a very costly endeavor. Nowadays, if you fast forward to today, there's all these different compliance frameworks, SOC 2, ISO, etc., you name it. And some of them say they require a pen test, but they don't really require it. But then when you go into the audit, the auditor is going to say, hey, where's your pen test? And then it's not only that, but that's also progressing into, you do deployments every quarter. If you do a pen test only once a year, that's not enough. What are you doing? Like, how do I know that you didn't introduce a new vulnerability in the last quarter if you pen tested 1 year ago. So that's why we developed the platform, so that we can combine that automated testing, which is very effective at monitoring infrastructure and monitoring open ports and open vulnerabilities that are well known by scanners, with a real manual pen test where an ethical hacker goes in and tries to escalate privileges, tries to do cross-account access, cross-customer access, etc.
Yeah, cool. I think there's a real value there, because it's obviously certain pen testing needs to be done by a human and stuff like that. But if we're talking about stuff for getting ready for audit, say ISO, SOC and stuff like that, I think there's some people get scared of it, but I see it as it's automating, you know, the stuff that should quite frankly be automated. And then also it means as humans we can spend more time on the really low level stuff, or the intricate stuff, or the stuff that's like really stimulating and really complex. So I think if anything, it's actually just going to make day-to-day life for hackers probably more fun, if anything.
Yeah. The other thing that did matter to us in the beginning of Securely, like our first customer, when they came in panic because Slack had run a pen test on them. They used to be had an app within Slack. And then basically they had some failures, some findings, which is normal. Everybody will have findings. And they were, okay, but where do I start? You know, like, what do I fix first? And then basically I came in with my engineer, architect, and cybersecurity practitioner ahead. And I said, okay, let's do this and this first. And let's show them that we have a plan to fix it. And we started working on it. And then everything started flowing really well. And then basically my co-founder came in and said, we need to build an app for this. And I'm like, you're crazy. It's impossible. There's so much to it. But she said, no, we have to build an app for it. And so she insisted, and we built the first prototype. And this whole thing, the point that I want to make here is that prioritizing, it's also a nightmare. Like, how do you prioritize which findings are you going to work on? Why are you prioritizing those findings? And then also, what's the background information on how you're going to fix it? What's going to happen there? And so in the beginning, with our first MVP, a lot of that was still done manually. Like, we used to, as engineers, as practitioners, we would come in and prioritize for a customer, slot the remediation roadmap and tell them what to do next, how to do it, and then assess them. Now that we have OpenAI and we have all these tools, we're driving all of that with these OpenAI platforms, where basically we consult OpenAI, what should we fix first? And then OpenAI gives us the feedback. Still, an engineer on our side will check everything to make sure that it checks. But now you have more agility in that process.
And I think as well, like, if it's a start, like, that's a good example that you mentioned, because if they're a startup and Slack's run a pen test on them, I think that's when the most vulnerabilities are getting deployed in the early stages. And if they've got a solution there that they can just tap into and get this stuff done on an automated basis, then great. So that, I can remember you talk about this to me before, Cross. So that really helped that business, didn't it? Because they needed to get up to speed and get their security posture enhanced quick, or it was a problem, from what I remember.
And so then they realized later down the road, they told me, like, oh my God, like, I just realized that now we're closing deals faster just because we have all this evidence that we have the right security posture. And so that's something that, like, I want to tell to other security practitioners, to entrepreneurs, make sure you have evidence of your security posture so you can show it and get through the door quickly. It's proven, like, it's a no-brainer. And now more than ever, you have SOC 2 compliance, etc. That's why we partner, for example, with Vanta, with Drata, etc. All these providers of compliance platforms, also Compliance Scorecard, it's another one that's awesome, where basically you can collect all that information, all that documentation of your security posture, and move forward through the sales process faster.
I think it's all great. And you get some people that are like team automation or team manual. I think it's all about a blended approach and doing certain things manually and certain things in an automated way. You see it in recruitment as well. Like, you either get the old school people that are just on the phones all day, or you get people that are utilizing AI and automation. But I think that blended approach, and be crazy to just rely on all this brand new technology, but we'd also be crazy to ignore it. You've got to you've got to have a nice, holistic and balanced approach. But yeah, no, it's cool. It's exciting. I think the next 3 to 5 years are going to be like wild, aren't they, mate? It's going to be a really interesting time, isn't it?
Yeah. Think of it as an airplane, right? The airplanes have pilots. They have always had autopilots for the longest time. I'm sure there's some kind of quote-unquote artificial intelligence in the autopilot, right? That knows how to fly the plane, but you still want that pilot to be there. And so that's why that blended approach works so well.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. And I think for any pen testers out there worrying about it, I just think really it's just, if you're the sort of pen tester that's just been sat behind the tools, running scans all day, chilling out, then yeah, you probably should be worried. But if you're doing the job properly and you're getting behind the tools and you're making stuff happen and you're writing your own attack scripts and you're having fun and you're doing what a hacker should do, then I think it's just all good. And I think there's loads to be excited about. But yeah, cool. I know running a business and can be stressful. I know there's people out there in the market having a tough time. Have you got any like mindset tips or hints for when things are going bad or when you're in a stressful moment? Have you got any advice on how you keep moving forward and handle things and keep moving in the right direction?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. Like actually, when we started this, me being more technical, I was, you know, in a way against it because I'm like, oh my God, there are so many big players out there. Why would we even do this? But funny enough, I mean, we had customers or people coming to us and asking us for the service. So it's going to get stressful either way. Like we're always going to feel there's a bigger competitor out there. There's a bigger company doing what we do. And or like, why are we special enough to capture a particular portion of the market? Doesn't matter who you are. If you're just a single pen tester, you're going to say, oh, why would I get any business if there are all these big companies already doing it? But the reality is that there's not one company that can reach the whole audience, everyone in the world, right? So that's, if you have that in your mindset, then you're like, you know what? Some business is going to come my way. The question is, can you scale that what you need in terms of budget and get to the right point, to the right level at the right time? Those are the things that become stressful in terms of like how you run your business, how do you scale it and stuff like that.
Yeah. Do you know what it is? I think with that, you'll be hyper aware of, if you're anything like me, you'll know other people that are probably doing what you're doing and you'll know the big players and the small players, but there's a lot of companies out that just won't. I'm the same with cybersecurity recruitment. There's a small group of people. I know a few guys and we see each other around on LinkedIn. And I know who like everyone is that's done it for a long time. And we bump into each other now and again. But not everyone knows that. So you can always capture a certain part of the market and you always click with certain people. You'll always hold relationships. So yeah, I think for people listening that are going out and having like a boutique shop and really specializing and adding value, I think there's always room and the competition's good. And it's like having that abundance mindset. There's plenty of business to go around if you're adding value and doing a good job, isn't there, mate? Hey,
exactly. And like you're saying, relationships, right? You know, building those relationships, connecting with people, looking to add value, like that's really the principle of everything we've done at Securely. Right now, I recently joined Olympics, and basically they have this amazing vulnerability scanner for Web3. And you can see it's the same thing. They are adding value from day one. They have captured 25% of the developer in the Web3 ecosystem. They have done amazingly. And how and why? Because they are adding value. They are building these relationships early on. It's not so much about getting business, but how do you build and create value around what you're doing?
Yeah, and for people listening, I know some people listening will be familiar with the Web3 space and other people won't. And I know you are, Kerry Allen. I'm very familiar with the Web3 security space. And Rekt News, I don't know if you go on Rekt News, it shows you all the smart contract hacks. But there was a smart contract hacked, I think, for $550, $600 million. There's loads of them get hacked for $25. A lot of these smart contracts with gaming that are like plugged into gaming platforms and stuff like that, these hackers are taking serious amounts of money out of them. And it's like, it's almost like pen testing on steroids in the Web3 world. It's like you can really secure a lot of funds. And you can really tap into your sense of purpose. And it's, yeah, for people that haven't managed to have a look in the Web3 space, very heavy on the code review to get good at auditing smart contracts. Obviously, there's an automated side as well, and there's tools to help you. But I know for the bits that require to be done manually, I know it's extremely heavy on the code review. But if you can get good, it's an exciting, it's a fast-moving and exciting space, isn't it, Carrier?
Yeah, it is. And that's exactly the goal at Olympics, is to make the audit like a zero audit kind of thing, where basically everything is audited by the platform. And it's really, you know, I'm coming in fresh to this. I'm just recently got hired as a senior software engineer here. And the job they are doing at analyzing a smart contract is unreal. It's just broken down into all these tiny pieces. It's called an IR. And then basically from that IR, like all sorts of analysis, vulnerability scanning, unit test scanning goes on. And then basically we report that to the developer. And that's how they get to fix these issues pre-audit faster.
Yeah. It is amazing. Because some of it as well is, I've seen it before where some vulnerabilities look quite low in terms of a severity level, but they can be chained together and do things in different ways. And some of the things these smart contract auditors can do, it's unbelievable. But I'm imagining, like, I know Solidity is a fairly high level. I know obviously like Rust and stuff like that's pretty low level, but I know Solidity is quite a high level. So I'm imagining like there's a lot of stuff there that can be done by the tool to save the auditor's time, is there?
Exactly. Yeah. And if you connect that with pen testing and for the sake of security testing, to any kind of security testing, right? Like, then we go into the next part that's really important, is what's a real finding and what's just a false positive. That consumes so much time for developers, for DevOps engineers, like knowing what matters now. Because any scanner can say, oh, this is wrong. Like, why? What if it's protected by something else that's on top of it? And why not? There are so many different scenarios.
Cool. Yeah, like I say, it's a fascinating space. And there's lots of, for that smart contract and blockchain technology. I know crypto is very divisive and, you know, perhaps crypto will be up and down for the foreseeable, but I think the block and the smart contract element is massively here to stay. And that's the really, really exciting bit. Yeah, cool. You've obviously progressed, Kerry, you've progressed a lot over the years. Started off back in the day as a dev, and then you've gone on to have your own business. You progressed to director level, CTO. Have you got any tips or advice for listening that want to progress, or they want to progress faster, or they want to get a promotion internally? Like, anything going on, any advice there or points you could share with the listeners that could be helpful for them in terms of their progression?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. First, find what's your passion within the tech world, right? If you're a pen tester and you're really passionate about pen testing and you want to... Do you really want to become a manager? Because you may become a manager and you might get very frustrated at being a manager of pen testers, right? And so that's why, even though I'm a CTO and co-founder for Securely, I'm still a developer for Securely because I just love software development and so on. And you can see I'm developing right now for Olympics because I'm very passionate about it. And in every single job throughout my career, I've been pushed towards being a manager many times. And I'm like, I don't really like that, but that's me. Other people like managing. That's fine. So if you are leaning towards management, then go that route. And always look at the company that you're working for, or I would say working with, as your customer. If you think of it in that way, and these I learned at Sony Pictures, like we used to be the IT department, and we used to call everybody within the company, the IT department, used to call them customers. And that was a very important part of our mindset. Because now, if you think of anybody around you as your customer, you're going to have that mindset of serving them, of making sure they are happy, of making sure you're adding value. And you're only adding value and you're only making people happy if you are happy at what you're doing.
Yeah, no, definitely, mate. And the management point is such a massive point, because I've had it before over the years where, and this is as a recruiter, sometimes you perhaps people think you shouldn't say this, but I do, because you want to make sure people are moving for the right reason. But sometimes I've been working director level roles or management roles and I'm like, look, are you sure? Especially if it's like a step up, because everyone thinks they maybe want that extra responsibility and perhaps the trappings and the extra money and bonuses and equity and stuff that comes with that. But the reality of it is for everyone. And sometimes people get 6 months in and perhaps it's not. So you've really got to tap into what it is you want. Because the last thing you want to be doing is 6 months in and missing being on the tools. And if you don't like management, you probably won't be very good at it. You've got to realize what you're good at. And I think you can still be a business owner, perhaps not. You can have other great people managing and get on the tools still, and you can still progress and you can still be wildly successful keeping your hands on the keyboard quite a lot. I think it's, you're right, Kerry. You've got to have a proper think and ultimately what's going to make you happy and keep you stimulated, because that matters more than anything. Matters more than money, matters more than anything, doesn't it? So it's just really tapping into, I suppose, your sense of purpose and what keeps you going, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the part of, management, understanding the manager as a technical person, it's very important because if you're technical, you're going to have to be reporting to a manager. And if you understand how they work and what they do. So I did plenty of project management courses and certifications that helped widely in my life, right? Because as a technical person, because I know what a sprint is, why do they need, and what do they need at the management level? Like that goes all the way up to the CEO, right? The CEO will need to report to the investors, etc. And so if you understand that from the get-go, you're going to be even more effective as a technical person. Learning and getting those certifications along the way can also be helpful because that, like, it opens the opportunity to do some management if needed.
Yeah, I think as well, you talked to then about that goes up to the CEO. I think understanding things from the other person's perspective and understanding why things happen. I mean, I always try and tap into the guests that come on, like how they've got their communication skills to the place they are and how they've advanced. And it's like a real common trend that ultimately, like, people that have progressed far in the business or the corporate world or whatever we want to call it, people tend to have got really good at seeing things from the other person's perspective. They've got a really nice sense of self-awareness. They're not just thinking about themselves. They're not just thinking about what can I get out of this today. They're thinking, how can I help the other person first? And then, do you know what? If something good comes later down the line, great. If it doesn't, no problem. So it's all these things combined. Like, it's, we're almost defining what it takes to progress. We're defining what it means to be a good person, a good communicator, and all these things multiplied together just really equal a lot of growth within security.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, mate. Cool. Corey, I don't know if this might be a tough one to answer, but I ask you anyway, is there any tips that you've got for people on the market that are struggling? I know there's pockets of the market. I know from stuff we're doing, there's pockets of the market that are really busy, but there's also people out there getting laid off and having a tough time. Have you got any advice for the listeners out there that are having a tough time at the minute and need to pick themselves up off the floor, if you like?
Yeah, I would say one thing that helped me tremendously was getting certifications along the way. And it's something that sometimes it's overlooked by people, especially because a lot of certifications are very expensive or used to be very expensive. So I highly recommend all of the AWS certification paths. They were tremendously helpful from the perspective of understanding best practices for application architecture, infrastructure architecture. From that perspective already, like, you're getting a huge value, but then additionally you're getting this recognition, and then basically there's a market that already needs these kind of services. And I feel we're only starting to see where the demand's going to go in terms of that. If you've gone to reInvent, it's such a huge event and it keeps getting bigger and bigger every year. So yeah, getting certified. I used a tool, an app that was amazing. It was called a Cloud Guru. It was really awesome to get certification training for AWS. I know they were acquired recently by Pluralsight, which is very cool too, the fact that they got acquired. I met the founder too of a Cloud Guru, amazing people, and they built an amazing product and highly recommended, really highly recommended.
Yeah, cool. I just want to pick you up on that point about the certifications, because for everyone listening, there is just nothing bad about getting certifications. You're never going to regret investing that time in yourself. And the best example I can give the listeners are, whenever we get a new assignment in or a new job order in, like, one of the first things I do is jump on a call, not too dissimilar to this, and have a conversation with the client. And sometimes you'll see in the job description, certification's not required. The amount of times that I say, look, I know it says they're not required, but are you sure? Is there anyone in the process that is bothered? Are your end clients bothered? Is the founder bothered? Is the CTO bothered? Are you sure? And the amount of times I go, oh, do you know what? Now you've said that, Tom, our clients do quite like certifications. And actually, do you know what? I don't really mind about them, but our CTO loves them and he or she's in the hiring process as well. So it's surprising, even the companies that say on their websites that certifications don't matter or all we're bothered about is your ability, when you actually dig into that, and I'm really big on this because I don't want to waste any time on a search. When I'm doing a search, I want to make sure the people that go over are happy and they're getting jobs and the client's happy and the candidate experience is good. So I'm really digging all the time to go, come on, really, let's find out. And it's amazing how often certifications do matter when they say they don't.
Yeah, it's good.
So yeah, a cloud guru, did you say? Did that help you get up to speed with those AWS certifications? Is that what that was for?
Yeah, I used a cloud guru for one of my certs. It was amazing. Like, the training modules that they have are spot on. The practice exams they have are spot on. Mm-hmm. I did also invest in like some other in-person training and whatnot. And that was way more costly. And I feel like I could have done everything with a cloud guru for much less money and get the same results. So I do highly recommend that.
Cool. On the project management courses that you did, buddy, so I know it taught you about management level. You said it taught you about sprints. Is there any other key takeaways that those courses gave you that you could share with me and the listeners that could give the guys and girls listening some instant benefits?
I loved a training that I did on business analysis from the developer perspective and from the technical perspective. It was great this came at the time that I was working at Sony Pictures. And the interesting part was, how do you architect for the business needs? And so there's this whole world of that's called business analysis and whatever. There are certifications for it too. And that was very helpful. I know there's a course also on Coursera that I think it's free. It gives you a business analyst certificate. So that's a cool thing to have too.
Cool, mate. Thanks, buddy. No, it sounds like they were massively worthwhile. And like I said, even the companies that kind of say they're not, they always do. And also, you're never going to regret getting a certification. You're never going to look back and go, oh, I wish I never got that cert. You're always going to be happy that you got it, aren't you? It's always, you're investing in yourself, which is just never a bad way to spend money.
Yeah, by the way, that was awesome about Sony Pictures. They had a lot of in-house training for free for the employees. And so if you work in a large corporation, like sometimes people are like, especially if I'm talking here as an entrepreneur, a lot of people think, oh, like the life of the entrepreneur is the dream life and whatever. I'm going to say not exactly. Like, it can become very stressful too. And the beauty of these big corporations is that if you find the right one, you know, you can have the right quality of life. You have all these free training in-house, which it's amazing. So ask. When you're going to get hired by a corporation, like, do they have some kind of a training department, educational department, etc.? Because that was part of Sony Pictures. I remember now the certification was called ITIL Foundations, and it was awesome for business analysis. So that's highly recommended too. And yeah, that was part of Sony Pictures. I loved my time at Sony Pictures, like great quality of life, again, training for free, etc. Like, it was really good.
Yeah, thanks, Corey. For everyone listening, the more people can combine, essentially we're talking about combining like the business element, the communication with the technical piece. And the more you can do that, if you can get really good at, if you're great technically and you can get good at communicating what that actually means to non-technical people, like your value really goes up. If you can really explain things in a business sense whilst being, again, technical, like your value just really, really goes up. I think that people that I see, that anyone that's technical and has got this ability to communicate with people that aren't technical, or they've got, if you can relate it to their business, or if you can essentially just demonstrate the value, so security no longer costs, but it almost becomes like an asset to the business, and they can really see why that budget needs signing off, or why they need to spend that money, or why they need that test again, or that audit, or to spend more money. If you can get to that stage, then you're just absolutely rocking and rolling. And it's such a, I don't think it's a skill that's talked about enough. I think it's a little bit underrated, but it's just so valuable, isn't it?
Yeah. And wasn't it that Elon Musk said that being a generalist, it's a good thing?
Yeah, okay.
I think he mentioned that somewhere. And I was like, oh my God. Sometimes like when you are like, a generalist. And like, I know a lot of software development, but I also know a lot about DevOps, and I'm certified in all these different things. I'm also certified on the business analyst side. And I'm like, oh my God, sometimes you feel, am I a loser because I'm so spread out? But then you see a guy like Elon Musk saying, oh, being a generalist, it's a good thing. And I feel it's a good thing. I'm not saying that it's for everyone. Like, I enjoy having the ability to understand the business really well and understanding the technical side really well. And I enjoy being able to develop software. But again, everybody has a different path.
Yeah, I think people have got to be versatile, because it's like you can niche or niche down in an area of, say, hacking or security or whatever it might be. And that might be really valuable now. And you might have guys like me ringing you all the time trying to headhunt you because that particular subsection of security is red hot. 5 years' time, that might not be the case anymore because things move so quick. So I think having that versatility and that ability to, goes back to stepping outside your comfort zone as well. If you can jump onto new things, it might seem nicer to stay in your little area, but if you get used to jumping about and learning new things, I think having an understanding from different perspectives just helps your overall. Like, if you've got a background and you're a pen tester, you're going to be a way better pen tester than someone without, because you're going to see it from both sides. When you're explaining to the dev team various findings, you're going to be able to explain it and articulate your report findings way better. It's just the benefits are endless, aren't they, mate, really?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's a good point.
Yeah, cool. All right, mate, any advice on, and this can be anything, I used to say books, but it can be books or podcasts or any content you're consuming online, but is there anything out there podcast-wise or book-wise that you're utilizing at the minute? Could be security-related, could just be like generally self-help that's been great for your progression, but any books or pods that have really helped your career over the years, buddy?
Most recently, I started reading a book that I would say pretty much anybody can read, and, you know, like they say here in America, for it, which is the one that's called Shoe Dog, which is, it's a memoir by the creator of Nike. And his story is just really very inspiring. Like, you see this guy who is somewhat, grows in a house in which it's somewhat a humble beginning, but also it's academic, grow into building his business skill set and finding the path into building such a good company. So I found that very inspiring. So yeah, I highly recommend that.
Yeah, cool, mate. Yeah, no, I've had that one mentioned to me before. I've heard it's like a really inspirational book. Awesome. It goes back to what you said about being an entrepreneur as well. Like, it is considered the dream, but perhaps at times when you're doing it, it's maybe not, or doesn't feel like it at least.
You'll see, it's funny, like, we've gotten our fair share of punches in the stomach, if you want to call it like that. But at some point in time during the book, I don't want to ruin it for you, but he signs a deal with a Japanese company, and then all of a sudden, someone else calls and tells him, hey, I have the deal for the whole US, get out of my market. And he's, what? I signed the deal. And like, it's interesting. It happens in business, so it's tricky, but it's an exciting book, yeah.
Yeah, it is. And I just really talking about all this kind of stuff because everyone thinks it's just happening to them, but it's not. It happens to everyone. There's a podcast that I was listening to. It's about a guy that started a clothing brand. And he had a similar thing, like called Represent. And anyway, someone else had the same name, and they were like a tiny little store in the middle of nowhere, and they weren't doing any business. And this guy was turning over about $100 million in revenue. Because they had the name before him, they could actually sue him for every piece of revenue he'd ever made since he started the business. So I think he was like 7-8 years into his business journey. Everything was going great. His turnover was huge, but obviously he'd reinvested a lot of the money into training and staff and offices, so he didn't have loads of spare cash, and he was just set to lose everything. And this went on for, I think this went on for a good year or two, and he was like spending a fortune on lawyer fees and stuff like that. And it's like, you hear about all these stories, but the common thing that everyone's got in common, and you can relate to this whether you're an entrepreneur or whether you've just been laid off or whether you're trying to break into security, but it's just keep going. Do you know what I mean? I did a post about it the other day. Just keep doing good things, and good things do happen. And I've had so, in the recruitment world, when you're dealing with people, you can imagine what goes on, and you do everything right, and then stuff still goes wrong, and it's what? You just have to just stay strong and stay fit and healthy and eat right. And I do a bit of meditation, which helps, and bit of training at the gym and keep looking after yourself and just keep going. And eventually you get rewarded. But it's easy to say, like when you're on a podcast talking about it, it's just that when you're going through that time, it's hard sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's hard. And by the way, that's a very good point. Health, it's crazy. Like I've literally been at the point at which, just because of myself, not the work, because I'm so driven to get stuff done, I've worked overnight and like had bad food and no food and ended up at the hospital one time. And I'm like, wow. I don't recommend it. At that time that I ended up at the hospital, I came back like a couple of days later to my boss and he said, what are you doing? I was at Sony Pictures and they're like, we're not, unless there's a patient dying on a bed, go to sleep, go to eat and just come back and continue coding the day after. And there's no need for the extra sacrifice, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would say also, you know, I did fall into that a few times in my career, and I recommend people to make sure you watch your health, watch your eating habits. Like we tend to overeat. I don't know how it is in the UK, but here in America, they serve you huge portions. Nowadays, I just cut it in half, share it with someone or keep it for later. You know, it's important. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And it's, I think, Kerry, I think we've all been there. I've really pushed my, I can feel when I'm pushing myself too hard. I can literally feel it going and I can't even describe it. I can go pretty hard. Like I can do 12, 14, like I can stretch out to a 16 hour day and I can do that for a bit and then maybe have a bit of a break at the weekend and go again. And I can do that for quite a while, but sometimes where it does it for me is if I work every day for ages on the trot, I just get to the stage where I just don't want to do it anymore. And I'm like, yeah. I don't want to. When I feel like I don't want to do it, that's like I wake up every morning and I really want to do what I do. And so the minute I feel like that, I'm like, got to go and do something. Got to go and get the phone and that laptop away from me and just like, just chill. It's the thing though. You know what it is? Do you find with remote, remote's great, but remote means that it's harder to have that separation.
You're right. Yeah, that's an interesting phenomenon of the whole thing. Absolutely.
I've talked about this on another pod, but I'll say it again, which is working remotely, like my apartment now, my bedroom's just literally there upstairs. And I can walk down here in, 30 seconds, 45 seconds. And I'm working longer than ever, but my commute is non-existent. And I'm not going for drinks after work anymore because I'm not in an office with loads of other recruiters, so none of that really happens anymore. But yet I'm working more than ever, so I must be doing something that says I don't need to work as much as I'm doing. You just think that you do with no commute and no drinks after work. You can probably take an afternoon off every week.
Exactly, and that's the question: like, are you doing that part? And that's what we tend to not do because we have all this time. We don't have the commute anymore, and we're like, oh, like I'll keep working. But why don't we think, oh, I didn't have a commute today. Let me just go to the gym for an hour, or let me just go take a walk at the beach or whatever it is.
I honestly think for me, it's almost like an insecurity thing. Like I get really anxious when I'm not working. Like I'm in my most relaxed state when I'm working, which is really odd. If I'm on a client call and I've done a few now, typically they go okay. And I feel like really in my comfort zone and I feel really relaxed and you get a success and you feel even more relaxed. And yeah, it's when I'm not working and I'm not doing anything, that's when I start to get really nervous and anxious, which is, I don't know if that's weird. I don't know if it's normal. But yeah, I think that's my excuse anyway, why I'm working a lot of hours, because I just feel more comfortable, I think.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Again, I think it's normal, but at the same time, the important thing, it's like what's healthy for you, for a developer, for a pen tester, what's going to make that person even more productive? Because I've seen it so many times where, like literally you're coding and you're the whole day and you're the whole night and then you go to bed and you finally rest and then you wake up and you have the solution of the bug that you couldn't find in your mind. You're like, oh, this is what it was. You already have it. But what happened? You rested. You took a little bit of time for yourself. There was a study on tennis players where basically they analyzed all the top tennis players and why did some win more than others and whatnot. And the key factor was that those that used to win the most championships, they used to turn away from the net and change the racket from the dominant hand to the resting hand as they were walking away from the net. So that tiny rest, that tiny space, which was probably a couple of seconds of rest, gave them an edge. So we need to practice that a little bit more in our lives, and then take an hour, half an hour, walk, run, ride a bike, or do whatever. Like I personally find that more extreme activities like rock climbing, surfing, kite surfing are great because they just shake your mind and take it completely away from what you're thinking at the moment. You need to be present. So if you can find an activity in which you need to be present, I think that's going to have an even better effect.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I love that tennis story. It's such a good one to listen to. And it does. It's like we released another podcast this week and my ops manager said, Tom, you haven't done a LinkedIn post about that new episode. And we released it like 3 days ago. It's just sat on YouTube. I've done no promotion. I said, I can't. And she said, what do you mean? I said, I just can't write the post. I said, every time I sit down to do it, I just can't think of anything to write. And I know what will happen. I'll be in the shower or I'll be relaxing, having some food, and it'll just come. And it's exactly what you're talking about there. It's like when you're putting yourself under too much, it's almost like in life, if you try too hard, it's like the universe sometimes puts up these walls of resistance. Sometimes you do, and it's easier said than done. And I'm one to talk because I don't follow this advice that I'm about to give sometimes, but sometimes you've got to just let it flow and it just happens. So don't get me wrong. Sometimes you've got to up the ante and dial it up and make it happen. And I get that. And that's all great. But yeah, I think sometimes you've just got to check yourself. But it's so easy to get wrapped in the moment, Carrielle, isn't it? Like even today, like I know we were talking before we hit record, and like today in particular, I've got lot going on, and I was thinking we're doing the pod, but I'm thinking, God, like I've just got so much on. But it's nice, like now, just talking now, it forces me to step out of my working day and talk to you about mindfulness and health and diet and eating and switching off. And even now, like I'm starting to feel more relaxed, like it's a good thing. But if I didn't do this pod, I would have just been charging and sorting this offer out, doing this and doing that. And it's just,
yeah,
it's so hard. Yeah, it's hard, mate, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's what's interesting about all these, like all these relationships. We were talking about relationships before, right? Look at how we can help someone else without even intending to, and change people's lives. And that's hopefully what this episode will do, right? Help some people too.
Yeah, no, but listen, man, I know it does because I get the messages on LinkedIn, and it's sometimes like you'll be having a day where you're really busy or stuff's going wrong, you're just really annoyed, you just get a little message about the podcast and you find someone that's listened to a few shows and it's helped them, and yeah, it just makes it all worthwhile.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's good. I always like to talk about mentors, the listeners, when guests come on. Have you got any thoughts on mentors or advice for people listening in terms of how that should be approached, and maybe any examples in your life or your career, Carrielle, that have benefited you that could help folks listening?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very good point. I never thought strategically about mentors in my career, and I think that was a mistake. That's something that I would do over, and something that I would tell my kids, find a mentor in your professional world so that you can have someone to rely on and have some kind of feedback, right? Professional feedback. Some of my best mentors, like I mentioned before, that boss at Sony Pictures, like he was a mentor, but he was unintentional, and it wasn't strategic on my part. He just happened to be there. Sometimes your bosses will be your mentors if you're lucky and you have the right person. Mm-hmm. But it is so critical to have the right people around. So yeah, I highly recommend having one.
Yeah, it is, mate. And again, I've said this before, but I will say it again in case not everyone's listened. I think sometimes people think of a mentor like I've got to go and meet someone and say, hi, will you be my mentor? But I think there's so many different variations of a mentor. Like someone could watch something on a YouTube channel, which is highly beneficial. That is a virtual mentor that now you've got via a YouTube channel. Someone could go and check out a cloud guru that you mentioned 15 minutes ago. And that is a version of kind of education mentorifications. There's so many, you know, you could have 100 different mentors and not even leave your house these days because of the amount of like cybersecurity influencers there is. And like the guy, obviously like Heath Adams from TCM, and like, there's been like a big John Hammond. All these guys have come up, and girls as well, that have really brought on this whole social media influencer, if you like. But they have become people's virtual mentor. So I actually think it's never been easier to get a mentor, really. And I think there's no excuses for not. There's a version of a mentor for everyone now, which is great. There's just so much information out there.
Absolutely. And also, it doesn't have to be like the kind of thing like, hey, do you want to be my mentor? It can be just someone that you have coffee with, that it's probably in a more advanced situation than you are, that knows more than you, that has had more experience, and that you can bounce ideas at and say, hey, I'm going through this in my career. What do you recommend and whatnot? Mm-hmm. And you get some feedback.
Do you know what, as well? People like it. Like, I was on the phone really late last night to one of my clients in New York. We were talking about some work that he wants doing shortly. And I was talking to him about running remote teams. And I just said to him, like, I said, look, we're recruiting some people at the minute for our agency. You know, can you help me out in terms of advice for managing people remotely? And people actually like to help and they like to share their knowledge. I think often people will take it as a compliment that you're asking them as well, because you value their success levels and opinion and knowledge. So I think don't be afraid to ask. And when people help you, they're reinforcing their own knowledge. So that's good for them. And then obviously it's good for you because they're parting with their knowledge. So yeah, I think just ask away. People don't tend to mind as long as you're nice with it, do they, Carol? I think they're pretty cool about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And obviously being thankful with that person, if you take them to a coffee shop, pay for the coffee.
Like, yeah. Yeah, that's
those
it.
Those kind of things are important.
Yeah. Or if it's a Friday night, pay for the beer.
Exactly.
All right, mate. Listen, as we come to the end here, I'm just going to ask you, I know I promised you an hour, so I'll try and stick to it. So in terms of leadership and stuff like that, have you got any like advice leading the team? I know the Web3 project that you've embarked on at the minute, you're leading like a team of developers and stuff like that. Is there any kind of do's or don'ts that you've found that helps your leadership skills? Is there anything now that you wish you knew 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. I think like everybody in your team, it's a person. Like, start there. Don't just simply think of goals and stuff that needs to be done. Understand the people that are in your team. What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? How can you help them achieve what they need to achieve? Literally dealt with every possible situation in management with teammates all over the world, you name it. In languages that I know, in languages that I don't know, getting close to your team and really appreciating them and understanding their culture, their time zone, what's happening in their country. I think all of that's very important. And then from the technical perspective, I think as a manager, ultimately, you're going to want to, or you're going to have to produce results. You will have to make a tough call sometimes and say, you're not the right person for this team at this point in time. And it's important for you as a leader to also make that call on time, because it's on you. If you don't make the call on time, the productivity is not going to get to the right place. So I think people need to manage that effectively. It's one of the most important things. If someone's not performing, also for the happiness of that person, they're probably not happy. They're probably not at the right level. Make sure that you dismiss them on time. If there's someone that you see you can nourish and get them to the next level, nourish them, understand them, and take them to the next level, and make sure that your productivity is par with what's been asked by the company.
Mm. Yeah, cool. Thanks, Kyle, mate. That's nice. And thank you for coming on the show. It's been good. Have you got a busy afternoon planned today?
Absolutely, man. It's all coding and pen testing, all sorts of stuff happening.
Good. Really nice to see you again, my friend. I'm glad that we've done this. It's been good. It's been nice listening to different ways you've progressed and helping the listeners in that respect. So again, my friend, nice to see you, and I'm sure we'll catch up soon.
Likewise, and thank you, Thomas. Really appreciate it for making space for me here. Thanks,
mate.